Blog Talk Radio.
Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Okay. Can you hear me, Susan? I'm having trouble with my microphone.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, cool. All right, here we go. So welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths. And today I'm excited because I get to welcome back to the show my friend Susan Bronsini-Moe. Now, Susan is, I've known her for a long time, and she's been my business coach and mentor, and she has been known to just kick me around the room when I needed it. So let's just get that out of the way very quickly. She doesn't play. If you hire her as a coach, she does not play. So anyway, Susan is the founder of the Bounce Back Artist Program and the author of the best-selling book, Business in Blue Jeans. And she has a new book out that we're going to be talking about the principles in it called The Bounce Back Artist. Now, for the last 18 years, Susan has coached clients around the world, my hand is in the air, on four continents in a wide range of industries. And she was also my business coach, as I mentioned. So we've got a lot to discuss today, so we're going to, you know, really do our best to get through it. She may have to come back for a follow-up show. But today she's going to discuss how to avoid becoming one of the 57% who looks for a new job or quits following a negative performance review at work, why it takes longer than 30 days to master a new habit. Boy, do I know that one. Why sucking it up is exactly the wrong advice and what you should be doing, and how to feel more positive about yourself and your situation, including one strategy that you can use with the help of a free YouTube account. Then she's going to share a bit about the 8x5x11, you know, the paper size, the one that goes into your printer, the secret to stepping into your ideal future self and seeing all the possibilities available to you, and the SMART, S-M-A-R-T, secret to creating goals that you'll actually achieve. She's going to show us how to use this trick to create better outcomes, and then finally, how to put it all together. Susan, good morning. Welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me back. I'm so glad to be here with you.
We always have a great time. We always do.
We always do.
Have so much to talk about. You're such a great guest because you're a subject matter expert. You know what you're talking about. Honestly, all I have to do is sit back and sip my tea. So here we go. I mean, you make it easy, you know, it's easy for me to make you look good because you make me look good, if that makes any sense. So anyway, tell me
about... That's the sign of a good host.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, tell me about the Bounce Back Artist. What is this all about? Because I'm waiting for the book. It should be here probably today. I can't wait to read it this weekend. But what led you to write a book and create a program called the Bounce Back Artist? It's got to be a great story, right?
It's so funny because I actually hadn't really thought of myself as a bounce back artist at all. And then I was working with my own coach and we were talking about what I do and how I work with my executive coaching clients and my business owner clients. And I was explaining that for the last several years, it seemed like people had come to me specifically with challenges that they were facing that they wanted to bounce back from. So like negative job performance reviews, failed businesses, lost clients. And in some of the mix there was also health scares, which happens all too frequently to entrepreneurs and high-level executives, and also marital challenges and separations and divorces. And so I realized that without realizing it, I had started helping my clients with specific kinds of setbacks. And the more I dug in, the more I realized there was an actual tangible process and actual steps I was taking people through. And I had created this process without even kind of realizing it. And I also realized that there are, just as with my first book, there are people who want to work with me, but can't always afford to hire me or don't always know what I'm all about. And so I wanted to, again, write a book that is as close to the experience of working with me as it gets, with the same homework exercises I give my clients. There's homework in there too. And I wanted to share the process. And then, you know, if somebody says, hey, this is great, I'd like to, you know, take the actual course and join the Rebounds program, great. If they want to do it on their own, they have the guide. So it was really, and I was excited about this idea because I realized that we all experience setbacks in life. There's not a single one of us in life who will go through and have some charmed existence and never lose a job, never lose a client, never have a breakup. I mean, we all experience setbacks. So why not provide the tools that my clients succeed with to everyone else?
Sorry about that. That does make perfect sense. And when you say homework, you gave me homework. I hated homework. But you knew that because I complained all the time.
Yeah, you did.
Hey, you don't need to be so enthusiastic about it.
Well,
all right, so I complained,
you know,
and moaned a bit, but I did show up with the homework. Still complaining, but I did it.
Most of the time.
Owie. Okay, the next time I have you on the show, we are not discussing this, just so you know. All right, so anyway. So you created this program, but you know, you said something that is very interesting to me because, you know, and I've done this myself and I continue to do it, I think we all do, we get caught up in what we're doing and we're not really paying attention or noticing what we're learning along the way and what we could be sharing, what we could be creating. And, you know, it took you a while to do that, but once you kind of went, oh, you just ran with it. So what was that process like?
It was interesting because not only did I realize that I had this process, but I also realized that the process is born out of what I've been doing in my own life, my whole life. And so the book actually, again, like the first book, has a lot of stories about my own experience. This one's a little more personal, I think. The first book is, you know, has some stuff about my personal life, but this book is a little more about some of the challenges that I personally have faced and how I have rebounded from those challenges to have a successful life. When a lot of people, the research shows again and again, a lot of people who have had some of the challenges that I grew up with and that I've faced don't rebound in that way. And so that is really why it's so important, this process. And I think the other thing is that we all have this idea that, you know, we have vague ideas about how to come back from a setback. And so it was partly that I wanted to, you know, take this process and I guess codify it, but also that I felt it was needed. And so when I started having these conversations with my coach and talking about, like, okay, what is this process that I'm doing? And I started to realize, okay, I have this client and she came to me and had, you know, had a really bad performance review at work, super high level executive. Just had a shockingly bad review and was not expecting it. Her board just surprised her, which, side note, should never, ever happen, but it did. And so there was that client. I thought, well, what did I do with her? What helped her to really come back from that? And then I had another client who worked for a really well-known company, and she had interviewed for a job and didn't get it and was shocked by that because it's hers to lose. So what was the process I took her through with that? And I started looking at each client and saying, okay, where did they start? And I look back, I keep copious notes because I have a terrible memory. And so as I'm working with my clients, I'm constantly taking notes and I have a vast database that's super secure that I keep all client notes in, and it allows me to go back in and say, okay, what did I do with this client? What did I recommend? What was the homework? But the interesting thing was that this time around, I had an additional tool, and I didn't have this tool when you and I worked together, Denise. The tool is what I call the trampoline system, and it's a cloud-based system, and you can put it on your phone. It's a little web-based app, and it's very cool. And my clients log into the trampoline whenever they want. They can create metrics, they can set goals, they can journal, they can, you know, get accountability, and I can check in on them and see what they're doing. So that was another thing I realized was really playing into my client's success, was having this tool that my clients could come into and use and leverage, so that not only was I talking to them in our regular weekly sessions, but also I was checking in on them throughout the week and seeing how they were doing with their strategies and goals and homework.
So is this is an app that you're talking about?
Yeah, it's a part of the Rebound system, and it's just an add-on part of the work that I do now, and it allows me to interact with them on a day-to-day basis. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about that after the show. I have a client who may need exactly what you've got. So you're talking about, you know, how to avoid becoming one of the 57%. That's a high number who look for a new job or quits following the negative performance review. The lady that you just referenced who got a shockingly bad review that she didn't see coming. I'm curious about a couple of things. Number one, how did she not see it coming? And number two, what was the resolution? What did she do? How were you able to help her past that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's a lot of information out there, a lot of content and books and articles about how supervisors, managers, and leaders should be staying in contact with their team members throughout the year, not just at their year-end appraisal or performance review, but throughout the year. So you should never actually be surprised as an employee when you go into your review, your annual review. It should not be a surprise. And in this case, this was a client who was a very, you know, she was a high-level executive, and she was the CEO, and she had been checking in with her board. She had a couple of questions about things, and she felt that she had communicated very clearly with them, but without divulging too much information, because I do have confidentiality agreements with my clients, and obviously we're not naming names or anything, but I do have to be a little careful with details. But she had just not had all of the conversations in the clarity and the straightforwardness that she thought she had. So when her review time came around, there were some board members who just didn't have the strongest positive feedback for her and had some pretty negative things to say that were surprising to her because she hadn't had the clear conversation. And so the first thing that we did is the first step in the Rebounds program. And Rebounds, as you can imagine, is an acronym. So Rebounds starts with R, and that's step one, which is revel in the pain and then expel it. So the very first step in the Rebounds program is something that no coach, no therapist, no one I ever talked to ever told me to do. It was just something that I naturally, innately do. And it is what I call feel the bad. And so in the very first step, in the very first part of the Rebounds program, for any bounce back, you have to wallow a little bit. So I actually give my clients some homework like, okay, what's your favorite comfort food? Okay, ice cream, great. This weekend, for the next week, you're going to hang out, you're going to cry, you're going to feel bad, you're going to not do anything to push that pain away. We typically push away bad feelings. We push away the bad. So we will binge on Netflix. We will go out with friends. We will eat and we will distract ourselves with our phones. And so the first piece of homework I give most of my Rebound clients is basically for the next week, do not deliberately try to distract yourself. Don't try to make yourself feel better or get away from the pain. It's our natural inclination, especially in today's society, to push away the pain and I got to soothe. I encourage my clients, I want to be clear to put the caveat in here that if you are suffering from depression or you are at all suicidal, do not take this advice at all. Get yourself into some therapy first and consult with a qualified mental health practitioner before you engage in the Rebounds process. It's very important. It's in the book. Very important that you are careful with this. Sometimes if you are severely depressed or suicidal and you allow yourself to feel all the bad, that may not be the best thing for you. So I encourage my clients to be very careful with this, but I don't take on clients who are in those kinds of situations because that's not really an appropriate area for me to be working as a coach. So with that caveat, the most important thing to do is to allow yourself to feel that pain, because we're supposed to, we're meant to. There's a reason you feel bad. It's because something bad has happened and it's supposed to be painful. So for a week or so, I just encourage them to feel it.
You know, we had a similar conversation during one or maybe more of my coaching episodes with you, but unlike you, I have always instinctively done this. I mean, I know that there's times where you just have to go ahead and give yourself permission to have a little mini breakdown. Yeah, you know, just get it over with. In my case, I go out and I dig holes. I have a very lush backyard. I dig a lot of holes. I move plants around. I'm constantly out there going, son of a gun, and saying bad words and praying that my neighbor is not out there listening. But if he is, he's got his lawnmower going, so it's good. But yeah, we had that conversation because I do the same thing. If you don't let off, it's like, you know, your tea kettle. When it starts whistling, you pop that, you know, that little button that opens it and slows it down. Sometimes you just need to let it whistle and just let the steam go through. So I agree with you, but you have to be careful. But you know what I have found, Susan? Over the years, my wallowing sessions get shorter and shorter, and they're actually hysterical.
Yeah.
Because I start laughing at myself after, you know, I'm going to go outside and I'm going to kick the tree and I'm going to do this and I'm all head up and I'm going out there and I'm going to just tell that tree what for. After about 5 minutes, I realize just how ridiculous I am and I start seeing the humor in it. So I don't wallow too much anymore, which is a good thing. But when something terrible happens to you and, you know, a loved one passes, whether it's, you know, a family member, a friend, or in, you know, my case recently, a cat that I've truly adored. I wallowed.
Yeah.
I wallowed for a week. And I'm not a crier. I cried. But you know what? When it was over and I felt much better. So that's great advice.
Well, and the thing is that sometimes this rebound program can, and I've got to apologize, I've got a little dust on my lap. He had hysterics when I decided to put him in the kitchen for this call. And now he is on my lap getting a little crazy. So if you guys follow my Instagram, you know Gus is adorable. So he's right here and he's changing positions. The process can actually be, the rebound process can happen in as little as 9 weeks, 1 week per step. However, depending on the setback, sometimes this first step can actually take longer. So if you've been fired from your job, that's going to be a big shock. If you're family member passed away. Sometimes a pet passing away can take a lot longer. I have a cat that I grieved for. I still feel sad about that cat. And if one of my dogs passed away, I will be, when that happens, I will be devastated. They're my baby. So I think some of this first step, it depends. I don't know that sometimes you can, quote unquote, get better at it, but I think it's important for people not to hold themselves to any particular standard. Like, we all have different kinds of setbacks and different reactions to them. And also, there are different levels of setbacks. So, you know, maybe someone said something unkind to you or gave your book a bad review. No, but those kinds of setbacks to me are a little different than someone dying or, you know, like a friend of mine is in his 80s and gave up driving a year ago, and he still struggles with that. And that seems like that's an interesting kind of setback to me. And so I think that there are different kinds of setbacks, different levels of setbacks. And I don't know that I think feeling the bad is necessarily something we can get better at or faster at. But I do know that if you don't do this first step, you can actually make yourself sick. And so the mind-body connection is so important and so deep and so unavoidable that if you do not do this first step, not only will you not be able to really, truly engage with the next seven, but you also can physically make yourself sick and you can end up hurting yourself in terms of future bounce backs. This is baggage release time.
I agree. And I love the whole rebound thing. As you know, one of my favorite pieces of exercise equipment, if you want to call it that, is my rebounder that sits in my office. I've got it in front of the window. I share it with my dog and my feline office assistants. And, you know, I have to, well, Hamilton, we talk about our pets. I have a pet. He's a giant ginger cat. He turns 3 this month or next month rather. And he's 17 pounds, and he is the bane of my existence and the love of my life. He rebounds with me. I get on that thing when I'm tired or, you know, my eyes are not focusing or I need to, you know, just go, okay, I just hit a point in this web development. I can't quite figure out what the next step is. Mm-hmm. I will step over. If I don't go to the backyard, I'll go get on my rebounder, bounce around like a little idiot kid for about 5 minutes, scoot the cat out of the way. He bites my ankle. We have a good time, and then I'm back and running. So rebounding to me is always a great word, no matter if you're physically doing it or you're emotionally or, you know, coming back from a business, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's a really good word. Write that down, y'all. Rebound.
Or rebound with an S because there's a last step.
Rebound. Okay. I'm looking at my rebounder going, as soon as I'm off this call, guess where I'm going? What's the next step?
The next step is to, we can't give all the steps today, by the way, because if we do, no one will buy the book. Why would they, right? So, but the next step is once you've processed all of your anger, your sadness, your pain, and you've really, truly completed the first step, the next step is the E in rebound, which is to evaluate the feedback. Now, this comes in a variety of different forms. So let's say that you had a bad job performance review. It's important to go back to your notes from your review or the email that you got or whatever they've given you and to really reflect on what's genuinely, honestly true, what's fair. And it's time to do an honest self-appraisal. So sometimes people go through these negative performance reviews, and one of the things people don't realize is they think that they can do the compliment sandwich. So like, here's what you're doing really well. Here's what you could do improve, you know, here's what you can improve on. And here's what you're also doing really well. So like, here's the good thing, here's the bad thing, here's the good thing. They think they can do that kind of little sandwich and that it will help couch the complaint or the negative feedback. But in fact, the research shows that no, once you get to the negative feedback, that's actually all people start to hear. Our brains are just conditioned to do that. So the compliment sandwich or the whatever you want to call it, where the filling of the Oreo is the unpleasant, even though the filling is the best part of an Oreo, where the filling is the unpleasant feedback, that doesn't actually work the way people think it does. And in fact, as soon as someone hears a negative piece of feedback, that is the thing that they will remember. So I do encourage clients sometimes to go back and have another meeting or email exchange or conversation with the supervisor who gave them the negative performance review and clarify. Like, hey, listen, as soon as I heard, you know, this piece of feedback, that's really all I heard. You know, were there good things? What are the other things? And you have to be a little careful because you don't want to waste people's time. Like, I know I had this meeting already, but can we have it again? But it's, you know, the nice thing about it is that when you are asking those questions, it shows that you really want to act on that feedback, that you haven't disengaged. And the numbers and the statistics are really interesting. I mean, when you look at from a business owner standpoint, because I know some of your listeners are business owners, when you actually think about your team and how they perform, I mean, businesses lose billions annually in lost productivity. And it's unbelievable how much it costs to replace someone. So let's say you have someone who makes 60 grand a year. Maybe they're like a middle manager or they're kind of a, you know, lower tier. They make 60 grand a year. And it costs like 45 grand to find the new person, get them up to speed and train them and all of that. That's a huge expense. So if you have someone like that who's not performing well, you really want to think about how you can coach them and mentor them instead of giving them a negative performance review. What are some alternatives to getting that person back on board? And I encourage companies to consider engaging in the rebounds program for their team members so that if they do have to give negative feedback, they can get that team member into a program where they can begin to bounce back and process that performance review. So we actually have an enterprise level program because it's so important to be able to retain those employees and keep them engaged. So now I've forgotten what the point was. Oh yeah. So thank you, ADHD. The evaluate the feedback piece is critically important because it actually is what you build on for the rest of the plan, for the rest of the program. And so you're evaluating what's important here. What do I need to actually take action on and improve? And what is within my control to change? So if it's a mistake you made, you can learn from the mistake. If it's a pattern of behavior like, hey, you show up late every day, obviously you can start showing up on time and that will make a big difference. So that's an important piece. I do also, there's another cautionary note in this particular step as well, which is that if your setback is a breakup or a divorce, it's really important that this step is something you take carefully, because first of all, there are contextual things like, I have misophonia, so I hate hearing people chew, and it literally makes me insane. My husband is a saint because he will wait until I have earbuds in so to like chew something crunchy, because he loves me that way. Now, he, if we, God forbid, ever broke up, please, I hope we never do, but if we ever did, his next partner might not have the same issue. So saying, wow, you really crunch super loud, might not be a constructive or useful piece of feedback for him at, in that situation. So it's not really something he'd have to work on, right? That's just something that annoys me. On the other hand, I happen to be, and I talk about this in the book, I'm someone who obviously talks a lot, and I also have a penchant for interrupting, and it's part of how I grew up, was like, if you wanted to say something, you have to interrupt and make sure you get your point across, because otherwise you're going to get lost. So I interrupt a lot, and that's some of the feedback that I receive from him, is that he would really like to have some airtime. So that kind of feedback, I think...
Now, see, that's just unreasonable. That's just
unreasonable. No.
Sorry.
No, he's so smart and so interesting.
But I'm talking.
I know, but he has interesting things to say as well. And so, I know, but it's a really useful piece of feedback for me, and I worked so hard on it, I can't even tell you. And so, you know, and he gives me credit and compliments me for the improvement that I make, because he's so sweet. But it is really important also, in addition to searching for what's contextual and what's relevant, to also make sure that it's not abusive. And so if you're talking about a, you know, a breakup, if you're talking about the divorce, if you've gotten feedback in an abusive or toxic situation, you do have to also be really careful with that, because that may not apply to your next relationship as well. So the feedback piece has some cautionary notes too.
Mm-hmm. And that's great advice, because, you know, when you're attacked on what you have to consider an emotional level, that's a whole different, you know, kind of wallowing, because you take that to heart. Now, when you're, you know, you get a bad performance review, that's going to smart too, but in a completely different way. I mean, you're at some level, I'm guessing that you're not going to take that too personally. You're not going to like it, because they're now impugning your work character and, you know, all the other things. But if you sit down and don't just go, well, they're wrong, and you start to really self-evaluate and, you know, go back and go, okay, they got a point there. Now, this one they're just dead wrong on. But, you know, they've got a point here, so now what do I do? Which leads me to my next question, which is, and I've seen this, I know you've seen it too, why people will just go, okay, and they'll just suck it up and, you know, go about their business and make no strides at all in making important changes. So why is sucking it up the exactly the wrong advice? And what do you do? I mean, how do you step back and kind of examine?
Yeah. Well, and I do want to say, like, there's a difference among individuals. So some people really do a good job of keeping their work life and their personal life separate. But there are a lot of folks who put so much of themselves into their work that they don't really distinguish between a work negative performance review and their personal. So they would take those. In fact, a lot of my clients are so intrinsically tied to their work that they actually take those things very, very seriously and very, very personally. So I do want to say that it's okay if you feel personal about your work and about the reviews that you get. In terms of someone sucking it up, a part of it is that sucking it up thing relates to the first step, and don't just, you know, suck up your pain and like, okay, just like deal with it, but like actually feel it. Some people think that it's the job. So there's a story in my book where I talk about a woman who I talked to, and she said, yeah, I'd like to hire a coach, I think. And we had this whole conversation, and then she's like, yeah, I think I'm just going to go get another job. And I think it's them, not me. She actually came back to me. So she had gone on to the next job, and she was one of those 57% of people who bail immediately or start looking for a new job because they think it's the job, it's the boss, it's the culture, it's the company. It's not me. I didn't do anything wrong. And so they'll just go off and, you know, do their own thing, find a new job. And when they do, not only do they take the baggage with them from that negative performance review and from, you know, the things that they have actually, without realizing it, internalized, but they also, so they start off on a bad foot, but they also go to the new company thinking things are going to be different. But because some of those performance things are actually their things, because they actually do need to take some of that feedback in stride. Now, I'm not going to say there aren't times when you just have a crummy corporate culture and you do need to leave because it is a bad situation. There are lots of times like that. But I think that there are more times when you do need to listen to the feedback. And we don't like that, right? Like it hurts when you get bad feedback. But it's important to listen to the feedback and take an honest stock of yourself and say, is this true? Does this have any merit at all? Because if you go to that next job and you just don't listen and you go, okay, whatever, and you do go to your next job, and I keep using, you know, showing up late as an example. It's not a great example, but it's real visible and tangible and easy to understand. If you start showing up late to your current job, and then you get a performance review and they say, listen, you really need to be here during work hours. You can't keep showing up an hour late. Then you go, well, I'm just not going to work here anymore. And it's obviously a problematic corporate culture. And so then you just leave and go to another company. You think you're not going to get that same feedback? Maybe you go to a different company where they don't care what hours you work and it's flexible. But in most cases, they actually do care when you show up. So you're going to get that feedback again. So the reason that sucking it up is not a great strategy and that not dealing with these things is not great is because you're just going to eventually have to deal with it anyway, or you're going to job hop. So nobody really wants to do that. It doesn't look good on your resume and it's not ideal. And if you're in business and someone leaves your company and leaves you as a client and they give you feedback and you don't listen, you're a fool. You're an absolute fool. Because there's a reason why people leave, and client attrition is not ideal when you own a business. That wisdom is.
And it's an avoidance, you know, tactic, isn't it, Susan? I mean, if you just, it's them, it's not me, it's them, it's not me. Eventually, you're going to have to, one way or another, and probably quite painfully, come to the realization that it is indeed you. Now, here's my observation that, you know, because we all have problems, you know, you lose clients, you fire clients, you know, things just happen. And it always bothers me a bit because I'm perfect. Obviously, I'm perfect.
Of course.
So there's always that hurdle to, you know, get over before you go, oh, okay. So what I have found is that the more honest I'm able to be with myself and not, you know, make a decision to, after I've read whatever it is or heard whatever it is, thank goodness it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's always like, oh, well, heck with you. You're off my Christmas card list. I mean, obviously, you get mad. You get all kind of bunched up and just, ooh, you just go into defensive mode. But I have discovered once I get past that defensive mode and I've dug my seventh hole in a day, I will go and sit down with myself and say, okay, Denise, we're going to have a talk. What just happened here? How much of it do you identify as probably being true, at least from their standpoint? Because let's face it, everybody you talk with is different. They have different ways of communicating with you. They have different ways of seeing what you know you're seeing, and they're wrong. But, you know, you have to kind of, to me, scrape away all the personality part of it and just look at the sentence structure, if you will. You know, what was said, what can you break down the sentence, break down the conversation. Okay, where do I fix this? Do I want to fix this? Heck with them.
Right.
Or no, I really want to fix this. Do I want to carry this forward? Are they right? I mean, you sit down and you get very logical and very linear and just push away that boo-hoo, which it creeps in. I'm like, you hurt my feelings. Oh, heck with it.
Yes.
And I just keep on moving. And so, but as you know, I'm a logical, linear person who's also an empath, so go figure how that works out. Half the time I'm on one side of the room, half the time I'm on the other. But I feel like a ping pong ball half the time. But I have learned that if I sit down and try to strip out the negative emotion that I'm coming up with, the answers are really right there. Now, whether I'm going to accept their findings, I don't know.
Yes, that's why you do step one, because that strips out the emotional content and the deep, my feelings are hurt, I feel so bad, poor me, so that you can get to step two to really evaluate that feedback.
I mean, you must evaluate the feedback. I mean, you can put it off for a little bit, but it's going to keep circling, and it's going to, you know, show up in your dreams, and then 3 o'clock in the morning when you wake up, they shouldn't have said that to me. I mean, it's just going to keep showing up until you discuss it, right, with yourself, or you assess it and move on. I mean, it doesn't go away. It's going to follow you around one way or another.
You know, it's a funny paradox. As a coach, my goal is for my clients to fly free, for them to soar and, you know, do great things. And there are some cases in which my goal is for that client not to need me anymore. And that's a good thing. But there are times when I've been working with someone that I really, really like. And so when I realize they're getting close to being ready to fly on their own, do their own thing, and, you know, they're ready to, you know, go, I'm always a little sad about that, because, and it's a weird, I've always thought it was a weird challenge, and it's true of both the coaching profession and therapy, that your goal is to, you know,
You don't want your babies to leave.
Yeah. But the good thing is that as a coach, I have some clients who say, I'm hiring you to do X. This is our goal. And then when we get to that goal or we get close, they say, okay, you know, we're getting close to this goal, but I actually now have my sights set on Y. So let's continue to work on that thing. And that's always really exciting, because then I have some clients I've been working with for 5, 6, 7 years, and that we have just continuously set higher and higher bars for them. And so you can continuously grow and have a partner in that. But yeah, it's always a little sad when they're like, you know, we've been doing this a while and I've got your voice in my head pretty well now. So yeah, I'm good, you know? And fortunately, most of those clients either become friends like you did, or they check in with me at least once a year or twice a year just for, you know, like, hey, this little piece of brain junk popped up again, you know, let's talk about it. And that way I get to stay in touch and see how they're doing. And I'm on a lot of Christmas card lists.
Yeah, mine too. Listen, why... And thank you for that. And I love the fact that people, once they get to their specific goal, they understand and realize that now it's time to stretch. It's like, ooh, I can see, you know, I've cleared the trees on this path. Ooh, I can see further. Let's keep going. And really, that's the way life ought to work, isn't it? I mean, you can't sit, and I see people do this. Okay, I have a goal. I'm going to make $50,000 next month, and then what? And they never have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put together this program. Can't guarantee that you're going to make that money, but we're going to see where it goes. But now what? What is your plan for after that? Where are you going to take your clients after that? What are you going to continue to bring to the table? But they're so blinded by that singular goal, that they're just like, oh, well, I'm going to have to think about that. Mm-hmm. Really? Okay, start thinking. Get back to me soon. we'll plan another. You know, we'll figure out what your next move is.
Life is an endless mountain, and you think that you've reached the peak, but that peak is actually just the ledge, and there's way more mountains. So why stop? Why get to any point and go, I'm done? There's so much more to do, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like a financial goal, but there's so much more you can always be accomplishing, and I don't think I'll ever be done.
Now, like I've told you before, people say, well, what do you think your end of life looks like? I will be in my early hundreds, still pretty spry, looking good. I will go to bed one night, tell my cats good night, you know, plot world domination, go to sleep, and that'll be it. I'll go somewhere else. I will never stop thinking and working and growing. It's just not in, it's not who I am. Okay, so let's get to, we've only got about 20 minutes. One of the things that you talk about is why it takes longer than 30 days to master a new habit. You know, I've read all the articles. Oh, it takes 7 days. Oh, it takes 10 days. It does not. You're lying to me. So let's talk about 30 days and what you should be doing, because if you really want to create a new habit, or I guess even break a new habit, you have to be pretty focused on that, don't you?
Yeah, well, and especially when we're talking about changing the way we think. It's so interesting. Those of us in the coaching world and sort of in the personal growth world, we are all very familiar with this NASA study. And I think I have quoted it myself. It's mortifying now. But, you know, we all grow and learn. We're works in progress. But there is this NASA study that is often quoted where they gave these astronauts, it was an experiment, they gave these astronauts glasses that would flip their vision. So you put on the glasses and now you see everything upside down. And they want, and there was something about something they were testing, some, I don't know, doesn't matter. The point is that they were doing some experiment to see how long it would take their brains to adjust to the glasses to flip, so their brains would flip everything right side up, right? So our brains are, you know, we know about from
the neuroplasticity. You mean after you throw brains up all over the cockpit? Right,
yeah,
after
right?
That?
I know. And so there's this study. And so it took about 30 days for their brains to flip. And it's not even, first of all, it's not applicable to habit and how our brains, you know, our conscious brains behave. Second of all, I don't even know if that actually happened or was a NASA study. And so this has fully been debunked. And so we have this idea it takes 30 days. It can take up to 6 months. It can take 9 months to change a habit, which is why people start exercising and they're like, okay, I got to exercise for 30 days and then I'm going to want to do it. No, you're not. You may not even want to do it after 6 months. You may not even want to do it after 9 months. And so, you know, we think that we can break habits quickly, but we can't. And so the rebound program can be done in 9 weeks, technically, if you move fast. But it, because habits take a long time to rebuild, it's actually a 6-month program because we want people to stay in, stay connected, and continue to build the habits.
Okay, so when you say 6 months to 9 months, I totally understand that. But with me, at any rate, it's a conscious decision every day. I have to kind of revisit it. It's like, okay, you know, now we're going to think this way. And I do that a lot. I'm constantly shifting my thinking. I have to. I don't want to stay stagnant, and I want to learn new things like you. So I'm finding that if I don't revisit it first thing in the morning, kind of like what it or Napoleon Hill, so you just kind of read out what you really need, what you really want, what you expect in the morning, and I do that, and it works. And then, you know, I go about the day because I've already insisted to my subconscious, if you will, that this is what's going to happen. It makes it much easier for me. Do you have any kind of advice on how people can, you know, make that attitude, that growth attitude stick?
Well, yeah. So step 5 is understand resistance. So we have to begin to understand.
That's a big word.
Yeah, that's what they're, I'm not going to say too much, but there are 2 steps dealing with resistance. So understand resistance is partly understanding that our brains are going to resist change. People around us are also going to resist change. And so your natural inclination will be to stay in the bad habit, not because you want to have bad habits, but because it's easier. We tend to go for the path of least resistance. We tend to seek what's easy. And so I think, you know, I have a client who talks about her daily ritual, and she developed a daily ritual of writing in her journal, meditating, and she, something else, she has affirmations that she reads. And then she also takes a daily walk. And so we actually tracked her activities as she was developing this habit. And we tracked, it was just like the tool we have, like you can send back a text message. Is it a 1 or a 0? Did you do it or not? And so we would track that. And when she would do her daily ritual, she would also track her mood and her affect and how she was, you know, reacting to things. And so we were able to actually track, and this is the beauty of the trampoline system, how her daily ritual impacted her success. And so you can actually see on a graph. This is something most coaches don't do. They don't really use metrics. And I love metrics. I'm all about a spreadsheet. So the metrics allow us to look at something and say, well, you know, like a client will call me and we'll have a meeting. And I have a client who will call me and he'll say, I'm feeling terrible today. I am tired. I'm grouchy. You know, Sunday night, I was short with my family. And I'm like, okay, I'll look at his little trampoline system. Oh, you know what I just noticed? You haven't been meditating for a week. Oh my gosh, he'll say, I can't believe it. And, you know, we think these things are good ideas. We think they're nice. But partly, I think, not just, you know, making it a routine and a part of your daily habit, your daily, you know, daily ritual. So just like you brush your teeth in the morning, maybe you take a minute out and meditate as a part of that. And, you know, maybe when you wash your face at night, you find a way to meditate with that. I actually do at night, this is a weird little secret, but at night when I wash my face, I do a tiny little face massage. It's supposed to help with wrinkles, side note. But that's part of my daily ritual. And for me, because I have ADHD and meditation is very difficult for me in terms of sitting still and all of that, there's a great book called Bliss More by Light Watkins, and he talks about how it's really important to make meditation your own. And so part of my nightly ritual is I do my little face massage with my eyes closed, and I meditate while I'm doing that. I also do a little bit of painting, and that's a little bit of meditative time. So you can figure out what works for you, but it's not just building in the habit, building in the ritual, but also being able to see the consequence. And that's why those metrics become super important. And I talk a lot about metrics and their value and how to keep metrics and keep track of things so you can really see the impact of your choices. And I think that really helps to really lock in habits.
It does. And yeah, I'm like you. I cannot meditate. I fall over and drool. That's all there is to it. It will instantly put me to sleep. Unless I'm trying to go to sleep at night, doesn't work. I don't know what that's all about. The face wrinkles and the meditation, get a face blaster. Seriously, I'll tell you about it later. The thing is magic. But
it's
you know,
dangerous.
The only time, it's fabulous. What I have found is that the only time I can really kind of go into a meditative state is if I'm walking the dog. You know, I just, she's doing whatever she wants to do, and as long as she's not ripping my arm out of the socket because she's 55 pounds and has a little bit of pit bull in her, you know, as long as I'm not in pain, I'm able to kind of go into this meditative flow. Another thing, and this sounds ridiculous, if you really need just a mental break, a quick one, go open your refrigerator door and stick your head in. You are instantly in la-la land. You have what I call open refrigerator door syndrome. You don't know what you're doing, why you're there, but you feel good. So just, you're not taking anything out other than a bottle of water, but you just, it's that mental break. It works. So when you say your client, he wasn't doing his meditation, was there a reason that you were able to find out why he wasn't doing it? Because it's a toughie for a lot of people. Yeah, I know a lot of people who just swear by it, and me, I'm like, I either drool or I start making my Thanksgiving list, and that's in July. So, you know, so those are my two go-tos for meditation.
You know,
it doesn't work for me.
Meditation is an interesting thing because we have this preconceived notion that you have to sit still, you have to have a blank mind, you have to keep your eyes closed, you have to, you know, say, om, and, you know, meditation is not intended to be restricted by rules. And I think that we, especially in the Western world, have gotten into this idea that we have to model everything we do off of an Eastern philosophy or an Eastern way of doing it. And you can sit on the sofa and just veg out. And by veg out, I don't mean like, you know, watch Netflix. I mean, like, you know, I've mentioned Netflix enough, they should pay me. I mean, like, just relax and, you know, think. You can think about things. You can clear your mind if you want to. Sometimes I don't really clear my mind. I do this painting at night, most nights. And when I'm painting, I will just tell you it's paint by number, which sounds silly, but the paintings are beautiful. Like, paint by number has come a long way. But the reason I do it is because I don't have to think about what I'm creating. I'm actually working my way toward learning how to paint on my own. But the beauty in doing something like this, or coloring and coloring books, the beauty in these activities that don't really require you to think to do it, like, you're not creating, you're just following what's already created for you, is that it gives you something to do And if you're not like listening to music, or you can, but if you're, you know what, sometimes I watch a show, sometimes I don't. But if you don't have something else going on in the background, it's quiet time and you can be physically, kinesthetically doing something, but you don't have to be, you know, quote unquote, meditating properly in order to meditate, if that makes sense. So for me, I do need to have something physically happening because my mind does jump from thing to thing to thing to thing. So maybe it's not that meditating doesn't work for you. Maybe it's that the kind of meditating you've been doing isn't the right kind for you. And I think that it's important that we not get caught up in, is my meditation the right meditation? In that case with that client who I was like, hey, you're not doing your meditation, what's up? It turned out that the kind of meditation he thought he was supposed to do just didn't resonate for him. And he found that an app like Calm or Mindspace or Headspace is the other one, where you have guided meditations, was just a lot more effective for him. So he bought a year membership in one of those apps and used it every night and hasn't had really a problem since. I think he's missed like 2 nights in the last 3 months. So it's really about finding what works for you and knowing that you don't necessarily have to follow everybody else's rules or models.
You know, when I really feel like I'm meditating and it's not mindful, I'm not doing it on purpose, it's in the shower. You know, I like a long, very hot shower. You can steam broccoli in my shower. And I will stay in there for a long time. And I find that that is, if I just kind of just, okay, I'm going to sit here on the bench. I'm just going to relax. Relaxing is not something that comes very naturally to a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And I will find that all of a sudden I'm getting these brilliant thoughts that are just kind of dropped into my head. But you know what I've done, Susan? The audience will love this. I bought some bathtub crayons because that's where I always have these amazing ideas and thoughts. Yeah. And by the time I jump out of the shower, make it across the house, get it written down, the exact phrasing is gone. I'm mad. It's not a good experience. Right. So now I scribble all over my bathroom shower. I mean, there's 3 walls in it, and I scribble all over them. When I'm done, once I've run the tank almost down to the cold, I will jump out, take my iPhone, take pictures of it. I haven't lost anything, and I'm very relaxed. And I'm beet red. I'm very happy. So, you know, the shower, I know, the shower is a good place to meditate. Now, I can't meditate in the tub because I've got the spa jets going. There's noise, and I'm reading a book or something. But the shower, for me, is just magic. So,
yeah.
You know, go where you need to go.
You want to do something that you won't, I know you won't do this, but try it one day. You'll want to do it, and then you'll be like, no, I can't do it. I just can't do it. But you want to like supercharge your brain at the end of your shower. Before you get out, turn it all the way over to the cold for 30
cold.
Seconds.
I do it. Yep.
You
yep.
do? I didn't think you'd do it.
No, I do. And I rinse my hair in cold water when I wash my hair.
It's so good.
And it feels good. It makes your hair shiny. Get not caught
into
the hair today. Yeah, I do. I mean, it just makes sense. You have to go from hot to cold, and and for a while I was doing it gradually, and that didn't really feel. I mean, it was like, ooh, now I'm getting cold. If you just flip that thing to cold, you go, and you get to say a really bad word, but then all of a sudden you feel better. So go for it. But yeah, I've done that for quite a while actually.
Oh my gosh, I am so surprised. You surprised
me
today.
I'm growing up.
I'm so proud.
Oh, thank you. So listen, we are running out of time. So one of the things that we want to talk about, we talked about it at the top of the show, is a YouTube account that you said will help you feel more positive, and that's, I guess, kind of in keeping with the meditation. So what is the one strategy that you're talking about there?
Oh, yeah. I should have mentioned this. I knew I wanted to hit on this, and it's so apropos because we were just talking about meditation.
Right.
You know, I was mentioning the apps like Calm and Headspace, which are super effective for guided meditations. But what a lot of people don't know is that there are tons and tons of guided meditations, quiet meditations of all different sorts on YouTube. And it is one of the most effective strategies. I sometimes don't, I don't really, the guy who does the guided meditations on Headspace, not my fave. And the woman who does the meditations on Calm, also not my fave. And so if you don't really resonate with those personalities and they do all the guided meditations, it's not going to be super effective for you. But on YouTube, you have access to a huge, vast, enormous, ridiculous network of all kinds of meditations. So it's almost limitless what you can find out there. And I think that's true of just about anything you want. It's all on YouTube. So I use YouTube quite a bit for finding a good meditation on the very thing I want, whether it's loving kindness or mindfulness or calm or whatever it is that I am in the mood for or need. And if I really want, like, you know, a particular kind of voice, if I'm in the mood for a guy leading my meditation, or I want a woman to lead my meditation, or I want to go into a forest in my guided meditation, it doesn't matter. It's all there. And you can favorite your, you know, the ones you really like and resonate with, and you've created your own little app.
And you can have friends do them for you. I've had friends offer to create guided meditations for me. Those I actually like, because I know the person, I respect them, I admire them, I'm willing to listen to their voice. I tried Deepak Chopra's meditations. Mm-hmm. I wanted to strangle him. Couldn't handle it. I don't know what that was all about. It's like, okay, no talking, just shut up. For some reason, maybe it's, you know, that part of me that says, you're not the boss of me, you can't tell me what to do. Who knows? So, okay, so the next quick question, because we are, I told you, it's a quick 60 minutes. I'm guessing this is a portrait thing, 8.5 by 11 secret to stepping into your ideal future self and seeing, I guess, down the road, all of the possibilities. Can you chat about that for a minute or two?
It's not a portrait. It's an
it's
old
not a portrait?
NLP. No, No. It's an old NLP trick. And it's a little tricky, but I don't think we have enough time to really explain it, but it's an old NLP trick that is a little, did you ever, when you were a kid, go to like a fair where they had those cakewalk games and you would walk in a circle until the music stopped, and then they would draw a number and you were standing on a number, and if they drew your number, you won a cake?
No.
Is that just me?
I've seen it, but I've never participated.
That may have just been me. Well, you don't like cake, so okay.
I don't like cake, and I don't like crowds, so no. Let's just go with no.
Okay, so it's kind of akin to, it's a little like that, but we don't have enough time to explain the whole thing. But it's basically you are stepping into a version of yourself in the future and sort of getting a sense of what that looks like for you. And it's an NLP trick that an old NLP trick that I use with a lot of my clients, and it's in the book.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, this is where we want to say, okay, connect with Susan, find the book, and that's a good lead-in for that. Okay, so we've only got another minute or two, so the things that we have managed to talk about, do you have any advice on how to pull all these things together?
Yeah, read the book. I mean, really, honestly,
so.
The book does pull
you
them
mean
all
this
together.
Wasn't a magic conversation?
No, there's a full chapter on every single one of the 8 steps in the Rebound program in the book, and it's, you know, a good $20 spent on, you know, and I've so far had people email me already. The book just came out April 1st, and what is today, the 5th? Yeah, so I've already had people emailing me and saying, like, I recommended this to my friend who's going through blah, 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 or I'm buying this for my kids because even though they haven't really had setbacks yet, they will, and I want them to be prepared to handle it. So I think that, you know, I'm grateful to hear that because that's what I wanted from the book and I wanted to be able to provide. So, you know, the book really does pull it all together nicely, and if you read the book and you're not sure, you know, exactly, or you want some help getting started, then the bounce, you know, go to bouncebackartist.com, and that's my website.
Excellent. My feline office assistant, let me try this again. My feline office assistant just growled at the window, which tells me that somebody was on my porch. The dog sounded asleep. She didn't hear anything, but the cat lost their marbles. So I'm hoping that your book is sitting on my front step. So I'll let you know if it shows up. Yeah, because I really want to read it this weekend. So before we go, tell people where they can find you. I mean, you just did, but tell them again.
Yeah. You can find me at bouncebackartist.com. That's it.
Excellent. Susan, thank you so much for being my guest again. I always love chatting with you and catching up with you. And I love the tips and advice. And Business in Blue Jeans, honestly, is one of my favorite business books. In fact, I'm looking at it. I have, oh, it's a great book. I'm even mentioned in it, y'all, just so you know.
That's
so
true.
You know, a bunch of my friends are. We have a lot of people that we know in common. But go find both of those books on Amazon. And listen, Susan, thank you so much. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.